Welcome to the Special Bulletin Review, the secure remote workforce sponsored by Lookout.
When sudden and widespread telework hit the federal workforce, some agencies were better prepared than others. Among the well-prepared, the National Science Foundation. Following a recent relocation, it doesn't even issue desktop PCs. Everyone already had a notebook. For more on how the foundation securely supports its remote employees and gets the mission done, I spoke to the Chief Information Officer, Dorothy Aronson. Let's begin at the beginning. Tell us how the National Science Foundation had to react when the pandemic hit and we knew people could not gather in offices.
Let me start by describing the business function of the National Science Foundation. What we do is we take ideas in the form of proposals, electronic proposals, from potential researchers, and we gather them together, and panels of reviewers from across the country and the world get together in meetings and review these proposals and then pick the best ones or the ones that are most likely to get funded. So the panel function, the people getting together, some of that was done electronically before COVID, but since COVID, all of those panels have been functioning 100% electronically. So the main impact of the move was transforming the 1,600 NSF staff to be working virtually, but also to change the way business was done so that the panelists could interact and perform their function virtually. And all of that was done. That transformation happened more or less overnight in mid-March, at which point people went home on a Friday from the office and began teleworking on Monday, everyone. At that time, we were in the middle of testing out Zoom as our virtual interaction tool. We had been using a combination of WebEx and BlueJeans before that. And what we decided to do, people were finding Zoom very easy to use, so we transitioned everyone away from WebEx and BlueJeans more or less overnight. That was a fabulous benefit for the agency, because before, people had to understand how to use a variety of tools to interact, and people were not all interacting in the same way, and getting everyone into a homogeneous methodology.
Sure.
Really worked well.
And what about some of the security considerations with a product like Zoom? How did you handle those? Because I think there were some questions early on in all of this about Zoom.
Yeah, you know, Zoom, we have been using a secure implementation of Zoom from the beginning. We had been working in the government cloud. We had been requiring passwords on meetings. So when the press started talking about the lack of security in Zoom, the Zoom they were talking about was not actually the configuration that we were using. So we just pressed forward using that our instance and did not experience Zoom bombing or the other problems that we had heard about.
Because you are exchanging important intellectual property on the network, and so you really had a incentive to make sure that things stayed secure.
Of course. And all of these products, you know, human behavior is very important. So the way we implemented WebEx and BlueJeans before and the way we trained our customers to use those tools was an important factor in keeping things secure. We did not experience any more risk in using the Zoom product than we had with the others.
Got it. And just discuss some of the equipment setups that you had. It sounds like nobody at the NSF had a desktop-style computer with a monitor on top and a computer underneath. Everyone had something that was portable?
Yes, thank you for that question, Tom. The National Science Foundation, about 3 years ago, moved from Arlington to Alexandria, and at that time, as a precaution, in order to ensure that work would not be impacted negatively or there wouldn't be an outage for customers as they moved, We migrated to a laptop with a docking station and monitor when you were on site, and the laptop was configured in such a way that it was secure, so that you could, when you were away from the office, you could take it home with you, and securely access the NSF internal network through a virtual private network. We also offered another alternative, which was a VDI, virtual desktop infrastructure. So there were two different secure methodologies for accessing the network. And so the NSF customers for some time had been used to using these computers that we called the seamless mobile computer. And so when we went to the working 100% from home, there wasn't a learning curve for most staff who were used to teleworking part-time, or even those who were working in the office but maybe periodically just took their computer home for the weekend, which is kind of the way I did things. So we all were familiar with that setup.
And did your virtual private network have capacity to handle suddenly everybody teleworking overnight?
You know, we were really concerned about that immediately prior to the COVID transformation, but we did not experience problems. And sometimes people ask, did you run a test? How did you know that we weren't going to have a problem? And really, we tested mathematically. You know, we understood how busy our busiest telework day was, and we multiplied that out by the number of people that were going to be working simultaneously. And we understood that we had sufficient bandwidth on our network, and that our configuration was fine. We did make some tweaks to the way we worked when we migrated. For example, we changed our network access so that if you were watching a video like a YouTube video, you would need to do that without the VPN. So things that you could access more easily, we directed people to change the way they work slightly. And we did that by blocking things like YouTube from the internal network, and that way people knew that if they wanted to do that kind of high bandwidth activity, that they should do that without going through the VPN.
Sure, high bandwidth and low content, I guess, value when it comes to YouTube.
Well, it depends. You know, that may be true, but you know, TED Talks or sure. Training materials are also offered there. So,
got it. And
it's got multi-purpose.
And when people are on the VPN, what's your authentication method?
Certainly, we have two-factor authentication, and we have a soft token, for example. We have, if you use the VDI, the virtual desktop infrastructure, you also have two-factor authentication. And so that kind of security is well-tested and well-understood. We really are not experiencing additional security risks as a result of our distributed workforce. We do send out more training materials to people and, you know, to heighten awareness about phishing campaigns and that might be floating around. But we have not really experienced a tremendous impact security-wise.
Dorothy Aronson is CIO of the National Science Foundation. We'll have more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Protecting your organization's mobile devices is more important than ever in today's telework environment. Lookout, the leader in mobile security, delivers modern endpoint security with the most comprehensive protection from device, network, app, and phishing threats without prying into your data. Carahsoft, the trusted government IT solutions provider, partners with Lookout to streamline and optimize distribution. For more security that goes everywhere you go, visit lookout.com.
Welcome back to our interview with Dorothy Aronson, CIO of the National Science Foundation. Here we delve into more of the technology deployed to keep remote workers secure and productive. And getting back to the VDI, the virtual desktop infrastructure that does not use the VPN, how does that technology connect people?
Well, there's a server that's in, you know, that provides something that looks like a virtual desktop. So it provides... So what you're doing is you're logging into our network using the two-factor authentication, and then you access an infrastructure that provides you something that looks like a desktop and provides you access to your files and your email and such.
I see. So because no one does have it, so it's not remote login to a PC at the office because people take their PCs home with them. It's some kind of a
right,
software.
Right, exactly. So... The reason you would use the VDI instead of the VPN, the reason you would use that methodology is because if you choose to use your own home computer, for example, and you're not using, and you want to access the NSF network, you would do that through the VDI, the virtual desktop infrastructure, rather than using your seamless mobile device. And the reason you would do that, that is because, let's just say you're, and this doesn't happen as often, but if you prefer using the equipment that you have at home, or if you are traveling and you go to a hotel and you don't have your equipment with you, you can also access the network using this other methodology, VDI. So we have two different ways of working remotely.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about the BYOD, or maybe that's not the best word, but the policy on mobile devices or non-government-issued equipment. Give us the bigger picture of how you handle that, because a lot of people want to use tablets and smartphones these days also.
Certainly. So if you choose not to use a device that's issued, a smartphone, for example, that's issued by the National Science Foundation, that's fine. However, it has to be configured securely, and that goes to your BYOD discussion, because what we offer those people is something called, we have mobile device management running within our infrastructure, and so you need to, even though you're using your own device, it's securely configured, and when it attaches to the device management system.
And on the device, do you, when you configure it, does it containerize it in some way? Does it try to isolate those portions of the memory?
The NSF data is segregated and securely, and the device is managed remotely. So, for example, if you lose your device, you notify NSF. The mobile device management system will erase all of the information on it that was NSF information. It's very common to use for your phone. For example, it's common to use the mobile device management system. So we have about a 40-60 split between agency-provided and personally owned devices.
And if someone has one or the other, are there certain applications that you ban? I'm thinking of TikTok and others that are suspected of maybe trying to do something other than what's obvious to the screen user.
Right, exactly. So we do have like blacklisting and whitelisting of applications on the mobile devices. So definitely I personally am using a personally owned device, and I have been for a long time. And I do feel a little bit of loss of complete freedom over the phone, but it's worth it to me the security that's described by the National Science Foundation and required is benefits me as a personal user as well.
Sure. And what is your device refresh for the government-issued equipment, especially those notebooks? Do you have a amortization cycle such that you're refreshing them regularly?
We have recommended refresh cycles, but it's not mandated. So in fact, the recommended refresh cycle is about every 3 years, and your systems have to be new enough to meet the security standards, but the specific age of your machine is up to the person who procures the machine, and that's a distributed function at the National Science Foundation. So each of the program offices has a distributed amount of money to spend on various things, and one of the things is IT equipment. And so they can buy the IT equipment that best suits their specific needs.
And we've talked about the devices, the endpoints, and the way they get into the network. Maybe to help our understanding, give us a sense of the infrastructure at NSF that supports all of this. That is to say, are you totally in your own data centers? Are you in the cloud? Are you hybrid? How does that all work?
We're moving to the cloud. So we have many of our systems and capabilities are hosted in the cloud, and our desire is to move as much out to the cloud as we can. Right now we have, we are experiencing learning growing pains when moving, especially the most NSF-specific systems, like the database, to the cloud. But as soon as we've been using cloud capability before, really even before they called it cloud, before there was a jargon like that, we had always been working in a distributed way where as much of the computing that we could do outside of our own infrastructure, we did. So we went to email in the cloud before it was easy to get contracts for that, and we went through a lot of learning about the complexity of that. And so we continue to try very hard not to be in the business of running a data center. You know, our business is funding research.
Dorothy Aronson, CIO of the National Science Foundation. We'll be back with the third and final segment of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Protecting your organization's mobile devices is more important than ever in today's telework environment. Lookout, the leader in mobile security, delivers modern endpoint security with the most comprehensive protection from device, network, app, and phishing threats without prying into your data. Carahsoft, the trusted government IT solutions provider, partners with Lookout to streamline and optimize distribution. For more security that goes everywhere you go, visit lookout.com.
Welcome back to our third and final segment of our interview with Dorothy Aronson, CIO of the National Science Foundation. Let's talk about modernization. That seems to be on the lips of every CIO these days, because I think now three administrations in a row have been trying to get the federal IT infrastructure modernized. What are your plans? What are you doing now? What's your vision for how things will progress?
You know, the modernization is a continuous process in IT. It's like a man standing on a log. You know, you can't really stand still. I believe that the impact of the COVID has been to bring the future that we anticipated to us more quickly. So, you know, the distribution of the workforce and working virtually, those were things that were on the plan. We just adopted them much more quickly than we had anticipated because we had to. I think that it prepares the workforce and the technology infrastructure for the workforce of the future. You know, the people that are coming into our workforce are going to be much more comfortable with 100% virtual working than those of us who had been doing 100% in person and had to make the transformation. With respect to the modernization specifics, I'm not sure that this has really changed too much about where we're going with IT, in that IT was being distributed more and more into the hands of the end user, and that's going to continue.
And so looking back on all of this since March, then what are your takeaways from mass teleworking, from responding to this and having pressure tested your VPN and your VDI capabilities and found that they were already there?
I think that what I've really learned is that people are much more flexible and adaptable than we think they are. And so I don't think that this was a big technology learning experience for me, but it has shown me that people can change and adapt.
And as a CIO, you've got your own concerns and staff and systems to monitor and whatever in the IT operational sense. How did that all work? Have you been able to be remote and still keep everything running?
Oh, yeah. There are certain things that require on-site, hands-on attention. And so for the most part, people have worked perfectly happily remotely. In fact, most of the workforce was already very familiar with telework and a distributed workforce. The few things, like, for example, if there was a hardware issue that needed to be repaired, it would require, or a specific upgrade of certain types would need to be, have someone enter the building and go into our data center. I think the biggest question was, how do we image computers? We hadn't yet gotten to a point where we were imaging new systems, for example, remotely, and we need to work on processes for that. And that's a, you know, so that is a thing that we hadn't really imagined. What if there's no way to ever get to touch a system? But other than that, the main issue of the workforce is keeping people communicating, ensuring that people are safe. Safety is the highest priority. And we've received a huge amount of support from the highest levels in National Science Foundation, and it's been clear from the beginning that they've been very supportive of maintaining our health, you know.
Sure.
People come first.
Is there any sense of telework fatigue setting in at this point?
Yeah, I think there certainly is, and there's all kinds of difficulties, and everyone has their own special brand of that. You know, people who have children at home can't possibly focus in the same way that they would if they were in the office, and that must be incredibly frustrating. I don't have that experience, but it must be terribly difficult. And I think that people do get tired of all interactions being electronic. But the world keeps changing. You know, we'll see what happens next and what we have to adapt to next. I think that we have made compromises in the way we work, but actually within the National Science Foundation, I would say most people are working harder. There's been, in spite of the fact that we've had this disruption, we've also received more funding to support research in COVID. And so in addition to the normal work that everyone's done, they've all had to rise to the occasion to help get us through the crisis.
Dorothy Aronson is Chief Information Officer of the National Science Foundation. To hear any part of this interview again or to download and share it, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to the Special Bulletin Review, The Secure Remote Workforce, sponsored by Lookout on Federal News Network.
The Stephen A. Cohen Military Family Clinic at Easter Seals is a much-needed resource for veterans and military families who are facing mental health challenges in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. The Cohen Clinic at Easter Seals helps the military community by providing access to high-quality mental health services for issues like stress, anxiety, depression, PTSD, and offers child, couples, and family therapy. Their services are available to any person who served in the U.S. Armed Forces, including the National Guard and Reserves, and their immediate family members, and regardless of discharge status. The Cohen Clinic at Easter Seals wants veterans and military families to know we are open and ready to serve your needs. Their clinicians provide evidence-based therapy face-to-face through secure video teleconferencing and have extended schedules to provide you with more flexibility. The Cohen Clinic at Easter Seals is committed to making profound, positive differences in the daily lives of veterans and military families. For more information, go to mfc.eseal.org.